Bryant. And joining me on the second hour, I'll have my guests introduce themselves.
Well, good evening, Lorna. I'm Gary Eagles. I'm Humboldt County Superintendent of Schools. I really appreciate the opportunity to participate in the second hour of the panel presentations. I was very impressed by listening to the issues that were brought up during the first hour, and I hope I'm able to contribute a little bit here during the second hour. I've had the privilege of working in public education now for a little over 45 years, so I think it makes me one of the oldest panel members up here, so I passed middle age a long time ago. But with that said, I hope that I'm able to bring a perspective to tonight's issues because they are very important focuses of conversation and should be in every community across America tonight.
Thank you.
My name is Alex Bowman. I'm a school psychologist with the Humboldt County Office of Education. I am almost in my 10th year in the county, having moved here from Arizona and previously Virginia. Grew up all throughout the Deep South, so when we think about what our own personal backgrounds bring to this conversation, there's a lot for me to think about and consider in there. I have gotten to work with almost every elementary and middle school in the county during my time here, and so my joy in coming to this community has to learn what it has to offer as a community. I've been very involved with working with the preschool populations and get to do a lot of work with individuals on the autism spectrum as well. My role has been to help support children who have needs. And I think that as we move forward, that's the greater portion of the question that I hope to help support finding resources for.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Carla Sanchez. I'm a student here at HSU. I'm a third year in the psych department as well. I'm the president of FREE, which is Finding Resources Through Empowerment and Education. And our goal is to strive to find resources for students like DACA, mentored as what it is, or undocumented students, and as well as AB 540. And yeah, I identify as a documented student. So we'll be talking more about that.
Hi, I'm Terry Uweki. I'll describe myself as a 25-year-old Asian woman with decades of attitude for the listening audience. I am recently retired from the California Center for Rural Policy here on campus, and I did program evaluation and facilitation. I did community academic partnership work, everything ranging from evaluating tribal suicide prevention programs to doing CBPR work in breast cancer research. And now I'm really glad to recommend to stand for the C in community academic partnership and moving over from the A side. I am a co-organizer for the Women's March on Eureka. That is something that is a new title for me in the last 3 weeks. It started as a twinkle in our eyes about mid-December, and we kept saying after the holidays, and it just ramped up this month. So I represent many, many women who have been working around the clock to make this happen, and I'm really excited to talk about it. So thank you.
Good evening, Lorna and everyone. My name is Renee Saucedo, and I'm proud to work at the College of the Redwoods as their Director of Student Equity and Success. I'm very happy and excited that some of our students are in the audience here tonight. I am also proud to serve as a steering committee member of a new organization that we have put together within the local Latino indigena community called Centro del Pueblo. Our mission is to offer services to the Spanish-speaking community here of Humboldt County. Particularly, we're putting together a legal services program because, as people know, Our undocumented community has to travel as far as Santa Rosa just to get legal advice around their immigration cases. We're going to be putting up a cultural center and also be doing leadership development, empowerment, and organizing within the Latino community. And I've just been an immigrant rights and racial justice organizer, activist, and attorney for a long time. So very happy to be here.
Thank you all for agreeing to be a part of this. Now, in the first hour, we talked about some of the legal ramifications of this administration that will take effect in just a few short hours. I want to talk about some of the personal effects. Our children in the school system within Humboldt County, children who immediately began experiencing trauma and racism and terrorism from fellow students. How are we navigating through that, both in our homes and at school? What steps are, what are the effects of the documented students? And talk about the empowerment of women that we will see nationwide and actually worldwide on Saturday. And we'll talk a little bit about Renee's personal story of, God forbid, things, maybe a sign of things to come in the next 4 years. Let's start with you, Dr. Eagles. Tell me what you've experienced or seen or heard post-election within the Humboldt County region for the schools. Has there been an uptick of bullying or violence related to students saying now you have to go home to your native land, or incidents of racism like that?
Well, interestingly enough, Orna, a lot of those types of conversations actually came up before the election was finalized. It was during the very visible run-up to the election during late September and October in terms of the public dialogue and what was going on through social media. And while it's not a requirement for the 31 school districts that I help support here in Humboldt County to report to me specific incidences, there were conversations with me about an increasing sensitivity that people had to these issues. I know Alex is going to talk about some of the systems in place that schools have put in, even before this became an issue, to try to put a stop to these kinds of issues. My colleagues, and there are 57, of course, because there are 58 county offices of education, I can tell you that throughout the state, there were some very significant incidences that occurred, again, coming up to the election, as well as afterwards, because there was a sense of validation that the kind of demeanor that went through the election process was somehow now okay. Mm-hmm. As an elected official, I have a different type of reaction than what others might have. So I react from that standpoint and react from the standpoint of an educator who's trying to advocate on behalf of all children everywhere throughout this county, and not only just in this county. As part of the elected official network for county superintendents, we try to represent the needs and interests of all students throughout the state. And we want, first of all, the message to be that students are safe, that schools are a safe place to be. And if there are incidences that arise because some of the adult population in this nation turn out to be bad mentors, then we need to counteract that. But we need to do so not through punishment, but through taking those opportunities to educate and talk about what it means to respect yourself and to respect others. We can look to the fact that though there may be changes at the state level, in terms of opportunities for undocumented residents, we still have the California Dream Act that exists in this state. And I believe, as the chief indicated in the first hour, he's very pleased that he's here in California. And I would hope that everyone in the listening audience is pleased to be in this state. And I agree with him that California will emerge as a leader in protecting the rights of everyone living here in our country. There was a 1984 Supreme Court decision that forbade public schools throughout this land to separate services between students who were citizens versus students of families who were not citizens. So that is the law of the land. I do not believe that law will be changed, although some have speculated what happens when a new Supreme Court justice is appointed, but I still don't see that issue. So enrollment occurs in public schools in this land regardless of immigration status. Additionally, we have protections in schools that in California that no personal information can be dispensed to any law enforcement agency of any kind without parent permission, except in two very, very limited ways: by court order or an emergency health situation of the child, his or herself. Okay? So I want to just set that parameter. But I also want to say that I am concerned about the welfare of all children, even those not only of color, but also of those who are suffering, for example, special ed or learning disabilities, because of the appointment or the proposed appointment of Betsy DeVos as Secretary of Education at the national level. And if there's one message that I want to resonate tonight, is that what happens in Washington does affect Humboldt County, California. And if there's one thing about this election that should be emphasized, is that this is an opportunity for people to rise up and to make their voices heard about what they believe is right and what they believe is wrong. And as some of the folks in the first hour talked about, many of the issues that are now coming to the forefront we thought were put behind us. I mentioned I've been around for a while in education. Well, that's because I've been on this planet for a while. And I was able to listen to Martin Luther King's speeches and to work through the civil rights era. I had the opportunity, even myself personally, to participate in some of the early 1970s protests along with the United Farm Workers, Cesar Chavez, in the southern San Joaquin area in the lettuce and grape boycotts. But today we have a nominee for education that doesn't even know that the Individual with Disabilities Education Act is a civil rights act at the federal level that protects the opportunity for children with disabilities to have access to education. As I said, as an elected official, that really bothers me to see people who are being appointed to key positions, and in this case in education, but it happens in other secretary positions if you look at the nominees, who are unqualified to serve. Because Ms. DeVos, regardless of her political philosophies, has no background in public education. As a matter of fact, has a record anti-education. But she is not qualified to run a department for which she doesn't understand even the basics of the laws that govern the educational opportunities. And when I have a president-elect who suggests that he wants to take $20 billion of current education dollars and devote them to charter schools, and then he in turn appoints a Secretary of Education who wants to totally privatize public education and to do away with our public school system, which has been the core component of the development of this country since its founding. That concerns me. because of my role to advocate on behalf of the needs of all children in this county, if I can't rely on a federal government that believes that all children are valuable and their rights should be protected, I'm concerned.
Thank you for saying that. Absolutely, thank you. I don't have a child in school any longer, but I have a grandchild who will be entering in the fall. And it's a scary time. Which brings me to you, Dr. Bowman. What are we doing at the county level to counsel, to offer safe space for our students who are facing trauma?
An hour is so little time to go through all of the various things that have been invested in countywide. I can speak to that, or I could respond to that question from a county level. I think that I could just as easily respond to that question at a district or site level, working within various schools. At the broadest sense, I think that I do have to take a perspective that is inclusive of all children. That is my role. That's how I see my role within my field, is to be a voice for those who don't have an opportunity to be heard otherwise. In education, we are very fortunate that the people involved in our field are helping people. That's part of the focus. That's why we come to work in the way that we do with the people that we do. And all helpers need guidance at a certain point. We all have great intention. We don't always know the right approach or technique or methodology. And that's a big focus for what the county has invested in over the last several years. If I were to speak to the potential trauma that may be a part of this massive change that our nation is facing, I would like to also consider that trauma is ever present within the communities of our nation. In many senses, we are fractured. We are not able to identify and provide for those who are in need, despite our intention. What has been a real beautiful aspect of moving to this area is the nature of the community that's found here. Not only a community in the sense of a county, but identity in the sense of the specific town and even the school site where a child and their parent and their grandparent may have all attended generationally. Excuse me. We know a lot more about trauma than we have in the past. We know a lot more about how it can impact development throughout the course of the lifespan and how that can then influence our achievements, where we go, what we can do, and what we can accomplish. There are countywide efforts to help support increasing our general educators' awareness and understanding of some of the techniques that are available to support individuals as they are experiencing some kind of difficulty through the course of their development. I think that we will always strive to reach that outcome. I think that this moment in our nation's history is presenting a lot of opportunity to see how some of those techniques may be applied. And so I support that, you know, we have a large cadre of psychologists, counselors, other mental health professionals who are available. And those individuals who are having difficulty, who do not feel as though their voice is being heard, they all have an available ear within hearing distance. And it's that message that I think our schools are really attempting to promote for the children and their families.
Thank you. Carla, you are a documented student. Tell me what that means.
I fall under the program of Deferred Action for Childhood Arrival, which is an executive act that President Obama signed in June 2012. And that gives me and other folks the right to work or have a work permit. But in order to do that, we have to pay a fee that now just went up on December 23rd of $495 in order to have a work permit. And that allows us to, you know, be able to work without being so scared of, like, especially up here where it's, there's not a lot of jobs, especially. So that's every 2 years you have to reapply, go again to Santa Rosa to go get biometrics, to like go through the first, when you first apply, you go through very rigorous, they check everything. There's very long requirements that you have to do. It's paperwork, very jargon, like all jargon based, but you know, I'm proud to be that. I come from Mexico. My parents migrated here when I was two, so I don't remember much of my native town or my native, but I still identify as that as well. So, yeah, I came to HSU, and now I'm a psych major as well as I'm in the rowing team. So even though I'm undocumented, people like don't know that, and it's hard to come out at first, but eventually you gain force. You have people who support you that have always supported me, especially when I was here, when people didn't believe in you. You know, every day people, or like throughout my life, nobody has believed because you are someone or you don't exist or you don't have a voice or you fall under certain laws that don't protect you. But you know, we do have power as well. We might be small, but we do have a lot of power. And here in HSU, that's what we lack. We lack that they don't support us. They don't know who we are. They don't give us resources. And that's when I got here in 2013. Somebody in the financial aid department told me that I wouldn't succeed here because for this reason, I couldn't afford it. Or the DREAM Act doesn't give enough money for like documented or undocumented students. And that kind of disappointed me because I didn't know where to go. I didn't know who to see. People were directing me to certain other people that didn't know what to do. So, you know, EOP didn't even know how to help me in that unless I had to go to a student group that, like, for example, that's how I got into FREE. And they helped me house me. Like, I didn't know these people, but they opened their houses for me, which to me was very inspiring to some extent because I knew someone was here to support me. And it wasn't HSU. It was, like, the Humboldt community as well as the documented friendly, you know, which to me has impacted my life because I'm still here. I haven't gone anywhere, you know, and even when I think of that lady who told me that, oh, it just enrages me every day because I'm proving her, I'm telling her I am better than, I'm the same. Nobody knows that. There's no difference in me, you know, I'm succeeding. I'm no alien. I'm a strong individual. I'm a strong woman. A woman of color, especially.
So, so, Carla, this university is recognized as a Hispanic-serving institution, but you're telling me that there aren't
services?
No. Services in place for.
We've been asking for an document center, which we haven't even got. We got people to people, with, especially with Richmond. We haven't gotten that. Like, we've talked to Peg Blake. Like, we've gone through very rigid processes with different administration. We haven't, like, gotten anything. You know, it's very important. Other CSU, other UCs have this. Why can't we? Are we too small? Like, these are the questions that I'm asking everybody here. Like, we are a small population, but that doesn't mean we're excluded from everything else, you know? That, like, I am also important with this university. I pay tuition as well, out of my pocket. You know, other people get financial aid. I don't that much. You know, I still have to pay out of my pocket.
So tell me what the student-run organization FREE, what it stands for, and what are the services offered through
FREE stands for Finding Resources Through Empowerment and Education. And the services they provide is, they do wonderful, amazing things that I'm very proud to be part of as well. And they help, when DACA first came out, they helped put together the paperwork. We do communities. We're we know the ACLU very well as during the fall semester, we do Indocu Week, which is a week of awareness of undocumented students. We show films to show HSU and the community that to be aware of those individuals, those folks. And we find support through even within the community. We work with Renee as well as like different other folks to help support these students, how to find aid for them, how to direct them. If you need housing, that can be with us, because housing is really expensive here, honestly. And I didn't get to experience that housing. You know, I had to work my first year. I had to work more than 20 hours to live here. You know, my parents didn't support me that much. And again, financial aid wasn't an option to some extent.
Terry. So not much of an activist in the past.
But
what happened?
Well, I've been here about 10 years, and I realized that it actually sort of got reawakened in me, because when we first moved here, my husband was the new city manager of Arcata, and at that point, we had been married 15 years. And if you were married to a politician, you can't get in front of people and tell them what you believe in. And so I always had to kind of keep it on the down low. And I don't want to say I got used to that, but that was a role that I had. I'd say when this all first started by somebody putting a call out, hey, you know, some of us have been talking about maybe trying to organize a local women's march. And I was interested, as were a handful of other women. So we showed up. This was in the middle of December, right before Christmas, and we managed to have one more meeting before then, which I volunteered to facilitate, because that's what I used to do in my job. I didn't know I was signing up to like be the co-lead of this incredible thing that's just mushroomed since the first of the year. But I think so many of us were feeling depressed and wanting to do something and just not knowing what to do. And this really seemed like an action that we could take. And I think it requires a lot of courage to take action, whether it's coming up here and sitting on stage and being on a live radio show, or if it's being an ally to somebody that you don't know, that you feel you can step up to the plate. Those are the kinds of actions that can take place on a personal level and maybe on a larger level. So people have asked, okay, why are you marching? Why are you interested in the Women's March? Well, I can say personally, I'm the granddaughter of immigrant parents from Japan. And I'm the daughter of parents who, with their families, were interned in incarceration camps during World War II. So I know what it's like, or my parents know what it's like, to have an executive order coming from the president in which your civil rights are completely dashed, no matter if you're a citizen, and they can lock you up. Does that sound familiar? When I first heard about what Trump was saying, I thought, this cannot be happening again. I couldn't believe it. And so, you know, I am committed to standing in solidarity, of course. I'm also the daughter of my mother, who campaign for Eugene McCarthy, so I have to admit, you know, a little bit of that runs in my family. And my father was a scientist, and that's really was what I retired from, was science and research to help provide data to inform rural policy. That's the mission of CCRP. I've been a single mother who relied on the safety net, that it looks like there's going to be some really big holes in that safety net with this current administration. And I am now this month a single woman on Obamacare. And just coincidentally, but I had made all these appointments because I was waiting till I got my my new insurance card. So this week, I've had boom, 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 one appointment after another, not knowing of course, at the time I made the appointment, that who was going to be elected, and that might all go away. So I have very personal reasons for wanting to be on this march. And all the women who are joined in this all over the world have their own reasons, but there is something that we are united in, and that is to stand up basically for human decency and human rights. Our very first meeting, we just shared, you know, why are we here? What do we want our theme to be? And we all landed on the same thing. It was to come together. Instead of saying we're anti-Trump or anti-Republican, no, this is nonpartisan. We want to talk about what is it that we stand for. And lo and behold, then the Sister Marches organization got together, and we found their platform is exactly what we had been saying. And this is what women are saying all over the world. Every day, if you Google Sister Marches, the number of marches that are happening all over the world, from apparently Antarctica to Iraq. Can you imagine having a women's march in Iraq? And so it's, I feel like this is going to be unprecedented and historic. And I'm so excited to be a part of it, because all you do is you just ask, well, we need some help doing this. And women are just jumping in, and men also. So the question has come up, can men come? Yes, of course. Then we got into trouble because saying men, women, and children didn't sound inclusive enough. So then we really had to define all genders, all ages, because I've been saying we want this march to be something that second graders can be at and your grandmother. So no violence physically and no violence verbally. Of course, we can't control that, but that's what we're trying to put out. So I'm just going to read what the mission is of the Women's Marches, because it's right in line with how we all feel. We stand together in solidarity for the protection of our rights, our safety, our health, and our families, recognizing that our vibrant and diverse communities are the strength of our country. In the spirit of democracy and honoring the champions of human rights, dignity, and justice who have come before us, we join in diversity to show our presence in numbers that are too great to ignore. We stand together recognizing that defending the most marginalized among us is defending all of us. We support the advocacy and resistance movements that reflect our multiple and intersecting identities. We call on all defenders of human rights to join us. This march is the first step towards unifying our communities grounded in new relationships to create change from the grassroots level up. We work peacefully while recognizing there is no true peace without justice and equality for all. So it is our hope that the march this Saturday, depending on what the weather is, but we're kind of expecting at least 1,000 people. There's been a lot of controversy, apparently in other cities across the country, that there are women who are showing up that maybe have different views on reproductive rights. And so the question comes, do they, you know, what do you do about that? Well, you cannot begin to work together unless you listen to each other. And we need to respect each other no matter what those beliefs are. And so I am never going to shut the door. There's no way you can talk if you're going to say right up front, you can't stand next to me. And that's my personal view. And there may be others on the march who feel differently. But we want to practice what we're preaching. And it's really, it's all about love and not hate. In fact, that's one of our slogans we're going to say. Love, not hate, makes America great.
Thank you.
If you're just tuning in, this is the second hour of a special Thursday night talk, The Race Beat. I'm your host, Lorna Bryant. If you'd like to participate in the conversation, you can call with your comment, 707-826-4805. The 800 number is 640-5911. Or you can text your comment or question, 707-492-5478. My co-host Jessica has a question or comment.
Yeah, we had Nelson from McKinleyville, and I'm imagining this will be interesting. He says that Obama promised change and had a divided House for his whole presidency, and Trump has also promised change but has a fully united House, so why not give him a chance?
Let's let that fester for a minute. Let's let it ruminate just a little bit. To allow Renee Salcedo to speak a moment. Why don't you tell me what happened? You took a little vacation not too long ago, didn't you?
Yeah, I wanna share my story because it's important to highlight what's happening to a lot of families, not only here in Humboldt County, but all over the country. But before I do, I just wanted to say, Lorna, put it in context that I too, as my fellow panelists, have heard lots of stories from people who we work with and who we are in community with. And I just wanted to share that working at CR and working with families in the Latino community, I have heard stories in the past few weeks about mothers worrying about their children who are yelled at by fellow students saying, go back to Mexico where you belong. I have been around gay men who sob to me saying that they are worried that their partners will be attacked because they are immigrants and how concerned they are about the future of gay marriage. The dreamers, like the compañera here, when I have been giving workshops to students, in particular to the dreamers, about what options they have and what their legal rights still are, the anxiety and the fear and the terror is just hard to describe, and you see it in their faces and in their tears. The Muslim families in our region, what they must be feeling right now, and what are we doing to reach out to them? Because to have to choose around the possibility of registering or remaining clandestine from the federal government is terrifying to me. There are people who I know in the community who are so depressed right now that they couldn't go to class after the election and they couldn't go to work. And there are families, immigrant families are predominantly mixed status-wise, which means that in our families we may have citizen grandkids and permanent resident parents and undocumented grandparents. And so the whole family is impacted, and the entire family is just terrorized that the kids might get home from school at the end of the day and not find the grandparents or a parent at home. In this context of fear and terror, and these are real stories here in Humboldt County, I feel it's important for me to share, as someone who never thought it would happen to me. You never think it would happen to you. And then coming back from Mexico in November of 2016, I was traveling back from Mexico with my family, including my mom, who lives here with us in Humboldt County. And she was detained by ICE, Immigration Customs Enforcement, and she was deported back to Mexico that same night. My mom is almost 82. She has been diagnosed with dementia, complicated by her diabetes, anxiety, and depression. And the ICE agents wouldn't even allow me to talk to her, to try to explain to her what was happening while they kept her in secondary detention. The ICE agents could have used their discretion, which they legally have, to release her to me, her U.S. daughter, her only caretaker. And instead, they left her on her own to travel back when she didn't understand what was happening. She could have died. And I am one of the lucky ones because we were able to get my mother back for a combination of reasons. Because I'm a U.S. citizen, because of her age and medical condition, and because I have worked in the immigrant rights movement for so long, I had connections. And I had a larger community who helped me get her back. But I'm telling you, I was ready to cross her, even if I had to walk her or carry her over the border. This is family we're talking about. And millions of families are being torn apart, just like my family almost was. I was diagnosed with post-traumatic stress, and I'm sharing this with you all and putting myself out here and my vulnerability, not because I feel like a victim, but because it's important to put a human face on the suffering. Because that's what's happening, and unfortunately, that's what I anticipate is going to continue to happen at a much heightened level. So when people talk about how they're terrified, believe them. It's real. And I can't even imagine being separated from my 7-year-old son, which is what some immigrant families have to go through. Or even the fear of that is just terrifying. And my U.S. citizen son asked me after this incident happened, "Mommy, are you going to be deported just like my abuelita or grandmother was?" These are the levels of trauma that our families are going through. So if we get emotional around our current political climate, this is why. The suffering is real, Lorna, and I think it's important for people to understand that this is not just another election. Deportations have been happening and separation of families has been happening for years and decades. But now we're looking at a whole other level. And building of the wall at the U.S.-Mexico border, you know what message that sends to me and my family? I'm a U.S. citizen, but I'm no longer welcome here. I am not welcome by my country. And people don't care enough about me to think that this is so serious that they discuss it instead of normalizing the racism. I am a stranger in my own country, I am sad to say. And I have the privilege of having my U.S. citizenship. Can you imagine families who are still undocumented? It's terrifying.
Absolutely. So we have about 20 more minutes of this program, 7 of which have to do some housekeeping. So that leaves us 13. Yeah, my math is okay. About 13 minutes. So looks like Jessica may have another comment.
Well, there is another call that came in, but I wanted to open it up a little bit to see if anyone here had any questions for the panel.
Well, what about the panel answering that question about giving the upcoming administration a chance?
I'd like to throw out just a comment in response to that as I heard that question. In our country, we have a tradition of giving the next president and his or her administration. We haven't had her yet, but that may happen. Maybe in my lifetime. But we give the next administration an opportunity. But here is the concern that I have as an educator, and I'll answer it only from that perspective. It appears by the data on surveys that have been conducted that a significant majority of Americans do find themselves floundering in this great pool of anxiety over what will happen next. There's also a large percentage of individuals who, while they may not be floundering, are not sure that Mr. Trump is qualified to serve as, in that capacity, as the leader of the free world, is what we like to phrase the President of the United States. You know, normally we look to the public record, the public political record of what an individual is going to do in the future with what they've done in the past. We have no record to draw on, at least not the kind of public record we're typically looking for. So in absence of a record, we have to look to the words that are spoken, the vision that may be created, the policies that may be espoused. And we've heard about some of the concerns about the policies that Mr. Trump espoused during the campaign, the vision he portrayed. But I would also say that a lot of our anxiety is also based on the fact that a lot of the words that he spoke, he also contradicted. Mm. So there's a lot of uncertainty about what he does represent. So what do you do when you're not sure where somebody is coming from? You look at their actions. When it comes to education, I turn to who he has nominated to lead the public education system of the United States. Not just the K-12 public education, but the education secretary also influences higher ed. But Betsy has called public education system a dead end. She prefers to see schools as business enterprises that should be competitive, rather than understanding that they are civic institutions foundational to our republic. She believes in funding options for parents, which is a nice catchphrase. But then when you look deeper, what does she mean by that? She wants to provide more funding for parochial schools without accountability. Now, we do have a belief in a separation of church and state. And when you take an office at her level, you swear to uphold the Constitution of the United States, just like Donald Trump will do tomorrow. I worked over 35 years ago for Eureka City Schools at a time when Title I federal monies also went to support certain church-run schools, St. Bernard's Elementary as an example. But the funding went specifically for reading and math instruction. It wasn't given to the parochial schools to run their school and to teach their religious classes. It was specifically prohibited. She sees no boundary in that regard. But interestingly enough, her advocacy for church-run schools begins and ends with Christian-run schools, conservative Christian schools. I don't have anything against conservative Christianity, but utilizing public education dollars to foster that, that does concern me. That is not an appropriate separation, church from state. The other aspect that I'm concerned about is she wants to support company schools, and I call them that. Profit-making K-12 programs where businesses will come in and earn profits, and corporate executives will earn profits rather than spend the money they get on the children they are charged to serve. As somebody in public education who scrambles for every dollar possible to be able to meet the needs of children, and we don't have enough, she wants to take the limited dollars we have, as does President-elect Trump, and redirect it to corporate profits. Businesses should not profit on the educational programs of children. Children should benefit by the public's dollars. So when I believe the individual's name was Nelson, says, why not give Trump a chance? Because he has a House of Representatives and a Senate that is Republican, and likely will have a Supreme Court also dominated by conservatives within the next few months. Those concern me, knowing that he has a majority that may be on his side with that vision and that appointment leading our public education system. I don't really want to give him a chance to accomplish his vision. And I'll go back to some of the civil disobedience issues that have been talked about. We need to monitor closely the actions of all of our elected officials. We don't want to react, we want to respond. We don't want to become hysterical, we want to become focused, and voices count. If there's one thing we learned in the 60s and 70s in promoting civil rights, is that voices sustained over time, focused on the future and the betterment, works.
I would like to add to that as well. Give him a chance. he might have a first year spot in this country. How about the people who don't? There you go. Like, you know, and that's scary. Like the day after the election, that was scary for me, you know, for my family, for people who don't. Like, he might have, give him a chance. It's his vision, like he was stating, it's terrifying because it's happening, and it happened out of the, like, you don't know how to process. When you were on campus, it felt like someone died. You know, it was morbid. And people didn't want to teach. People didn't want to even be here. And people were, yeah, there's things to worry, but there's people that are endangered right now, like the population, like myself, you know, of losing DACA. What am I going to do? How am I going to work? How am I going to survive? I have this degree. Now what? I can't work. You know, if he takes that off, what's going to happen? You know, and people don't understand that because it doesn't affect you. You're not part of that group. Unless it affects you directly, you understand. You know, and I want to say that very clear because it's affecting a lot of people I know. And, you know, it's very hurtful, like with Renee, what I heard that happened to her mom. You know, that could have been anybody's mom, you know.
Thank you. Thank you. And that's a perfect segue. Sylvia and Eureka, I guess wanted to reiterate that she feels Trump's policies would only benefit the ultra rich and undo a lot of positive gains made by the previous administration. So I think you addressed some of that. I'm not sure if you want to tackle this just yet, but Mike in Crescent City wants to know about the possibility of Trump being impeached.
Well, what does the audience feel about that?
Does anybody from the audience want to say something? Questions? Anything? I'll come right to you.
And we have about 4 minutes.
Thank you, Lorna, Bryant, for hosting this. As we sit here and talk about the things like, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? What are we going to do? I feel like as a college graduate, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to go to law school. I'm going to get into these like positions of power, whether it's a education board or a healthcare board or something like that. There's a lot of people that I know encouraging themselves to get up into these higher levels of education or administration so they can even be at the playing field. So especially if we're going to be on a college campus having this talk, students are listening. There's a lot of rhetoric that we gain by going to a university, but the rhetoric can be put into action if we do something after graduation, right? And talk after talk after talk, and being in mourning about Obama leaving the White House, but at the same time hating Hillary, being disappointed about Bernie. I mean, it all takes so much time. And we're putting all of our faith in individuals without putting our faith in ourselves and our own self-power, you know, to go on and do something with our education. There's a huge, huge lack and, you know, disconnect between what sometimes is said on a university about inclusion and about diversity, and to the point that Carla just made, not everyone has access, you know, and not everyone's even history is told properly in their classrooms. We talk about education being inclusive even at the K-12 level. You know, how many days are spent on Black history? Is it just in February? Are we doing Black history all year? Do the students know they're on native land being in Humboldt County? I mean, what are we talking about even at the K-12 level? So that's a point that I want to make. And I want to also, you know, we learn from our history without magnifying it. You know, things have happened in the past. Will it happen again? I think that's very alarmist. You know, Betsy DeVos is not in charge of education. You're in charge of your own education.
So, okay, you're up.
Please be brief.
We can go over a little bit. I just got the go ahead.
Oh,
so.
Okay. Well, thank you.
I don't have anything special to say. I think a lot of people said very important things tonight. I just want to acknowledge that you three ladies shared your own personal experience tonight, and I want to show appreciation to that. I know everybody has their own personal experiences, but these three ladies, they share part of their lives with us and the listeners on the radio. And I know that moves me, and I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, I'll come to you in just a second. I've got a young listener here.
Well, my son here, Carlo, 7 years old, and he's been listening. He's been hearing a lot of things. He's already has a bit of an analysis about what some people have been saying, and he wrote down, which he wants to hold the sign which says, "Let there be peace on earth." That is what he said.
Thank you, Carlo. Thank you.
I just wanted to say I keep hearing two words, fear, and I think that's Trump and like-minded individuals' greatest weapon. And then I heard Terry mention love, and I think that's our greatest weapon. And if we come together in love and unite and find that common ground, which we know how to do here in Humboldt County, we can move past Trump and all the chaos that he keeps creating and fear that we're feeding off of, that is his and like-minded individuals' greatest weapon.
Mm-hmm. May I add another word? Another word in it for me is resistance, in the sense that our new president now is threatening the lives of our families. It is life and death for many communities. And so for the immigrant community, for example, tomorrow we're holding a press conference as communities of color to say we're going to be asking for the county to become a sanctuary county. We're going to make sure that the sheriff's office doesn't share information with immigration. We're going to make sure that racial profiling stops within our institutions. Et cetera, et cetera. So I just wanted to add that we locally have a lot of power to not have to accept what is being proposed at a national level. Is it going to be difficult? Yes. Will it take courage? Yes. Will it take sacrifice? Absolutely. But I think that now is the time. And so everyone is welcome tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. in front of the county courthouse. Be in solidarity with communities of color who are going through a lot of this stuff, who are going to say, these are experiences, but we will resist, and we will survive, and we will flourish in this community.
Absolutely. Anyone here like to emphasize or share again the information about the Day of Solidarity here on Humboldt State's campus? If anyone would like to just where to get more information about that, humboldt.edu. Again, it's a Day of Solidarity for everyone on the campus. Okay, Celeste.
Good evening. I'm Celeste Robertson. I'm an advisor with the Education Opportunity Program here at Humboldt State. I am the coordinator of the Day of Solidarity tomorrow, along with a bunch of other fine people who have joined from different offices to help bring this together. It initially started out with one of our advisors, Elias Pence, who wanted at the day after the election, we had so many students coming into our offices because our program, EOP, as it's referred to, works with first-generation students, students who are the first in their family to go to college. Many of our students are undocumented students, and when they came into the office the day after the election, crying, upset, worried about their families, worried about themselves, whether or not they would be able to continue their education here, we decided it was time to do something. It started out with Elias coming up with an idea of posting a banner on the window on his office window in EOP. Then it moved to my thinking, maybe we should do a rally for EOP students out in the quad. Then it became, let's do a day of solidarity. Show the university that we all stand together as a family, because as you know, each in a family, there are always disagreements. There's always that one uncle, that one aunt, that one grandpa that doesn't see eye to eye. So we have planned a wonderful day of activities for you. Tomorrow rather, at 1 o'clock here in this same room in the Cape Buchanan room, we will have activities set up. We're going to have massage therapists. We're going to have people helping you to do yoga. We're going to have food and food and food. We're going to have a ball pit so you can jump in and toss those balls around like you did when you were 3 years old. Yeah, you know you did it. And then we're going to have art therapy so you can sit down and color. You can talk. There's going to be music and whatever. At the same time, from 1 to 3, in the South Lounge, which is down the road a bit in this building, we're going to have a reflection piece. You'll be able to go in and write on butcher paper that's been posted all you feel about what's going on in this country and how it is affecting you. If you feel as an African American, this is difficult. As a member of the LGBTQ community, this is tough. As an undocumented student, this is rough. You can write, and then you can write and tell what you feel you need in order to survive this turbulent time for you. Then from 3 to 5, over in the Great Hall, we're gonna have a speak out. You can stand up. You can talk about what's going on in your heart, how you feel about the direction of this country. How you feel that others have been affected that you've talked to, and what you hope to see for the future. There's going to be food there too. All right, there are going to be brownies and cookies and lemonade and hot chocolate, vegetable trays, but you know, whatever. So then at 5:30, we're going to move down to the Great Hall, which is over the marketplace. And we're going to feed you a nice, good pasta dinner with garlic bread, salad, and something to drink. No, not that kind of drink. Okay. So, and then from about 6 to about 7:30, we're going to have two of the major groups on campus, including Check It, to help you understand what it's like to be a good bystander when you have to intervene. Say you're sitting somewhere and you hear someone being accosted. You know those Mexicans. You know what they're like. You know those gays. You know those blacks. How you can stand up and challenge that in a way, no, not with fist, although you might want to, but how to do it peacefully. How you become an ally to another person, to a group, to a cause, to a people. So we should be through about 7:30 tomorrow night. But we're going to have games and other stuff going on at the same time throughout the evening in the Great Hall. So come. I invite everyone on this campus. The president on down has been invited. I've invited every student, every faculty member, to come and staff member to join us, and all of those in the community within the sound of my voice who would like to learn and share with us and show that there, in spite of all the turbulent times, that there can be peace, there can be dialogue, exchange of ideas. We might not agree all the time, but we can at least talk to each other and respect each other. So I invite you to please come.
Thank you. Thank you. So we are stepping on the toes of another show that should have begun at 8 o'clock, so I'm not gonna take up any more of that time, but I would like to thank Dr. Gary Eagles, Dr. Alex Bowman, Carla Sanchez, Terry Uwecki, and Renee Salcedo. Thank you to the first hour panelists as well. Thank you to Geraldine Goldberg, our Thursday night talk producer, Katie Whiteside, the KHSU program director, Kevin Sanders, the broadcast engineer who is making this remote broadcast possible right now. Thank you to Michael Roccaforte, our KHSU studio engineer, who is manning the board right now and fielding those questions. David Reed, our interim general manager. Mike Dronkers, our board operator and social media person. It looks like David is social media right now as well. The KHSU staff and volunteers for their support for this event. And Rob Enge, who volunteered an hour of his time of his show this evening. Thank you also to the University Center staff and dining services for allowing us this space. And thank you to Jessica Eden, tonight's program coordinator and co-host. Thank you all for participating. Thank you, and thank you for listening. I look forward to more remote broadcast, more dialogues like this, and more times for us to share in these conversations. I'm gonna end with yet another song and then toss it over to the studio. I've always wanted to say that. I got my opportunity. Over to you, Michael, in the studio. Thank you.